From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point.
Mickey Mouse Club, Mickey Mouse Club, Mickey Mouse Club, Mickey Mouse Club.
Child stars, then teen stars, really showed up with the movies. From Shirley Temple right on through, we could not take our eyes off them. This week, Annette Funicello, the 1950s Mickey Mouse Club TV sweetheart, has died, while Justin Bieber's growing pains are in the news, and a new generation of Disney stars have gone bad girl in Spring Breakers. This hour on Point, the role, the arc of the child star, the teen star, in our minds, in our media culture. You can join us on air, online. What do we really want from these kids? Would you like Bieber or Lindsay Lohan better if they were squeaky clean? What's the role of the child star? Join us anytime digitally at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With us today from Birmingham, England, is Jane O'Connor. She's a lecturer and researcher in childhood and family studies at the University of Wolverhampton, author of The Cultural Significance of the Child Star, and From Jackie Coogan to Michael Jackson, What Child Stars Can Tell Us About Ideologies of Childhood. Jane O'Connor, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from Syracuse, New York, is Bob Thompson, director of the Center for TV and Pop Culture at Syracuse University and author of Television's Second Golden Age and Primetime Prime Movers. Bob Thompson, welcome back. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Bob, listen to these two and Jane, just back-to-back with us. We've got a whole century in a way to look at here, but these two are on our minds this week. First, Annette Funicello, Mickey Mouse Club. This was 1959. She's decked out in her mouse ears and sweater singing a song to introduce a cartoon.
Time to twist our mousey dial to the right and the left with a great big smile. This is the way we get to see a mouse cartoon for you and me.
Okay, there's one way, a 1950s way. Here's another piece of tape on tour. Last month in London, pop singer Justin Bieber got into an expletive-laden argument with members of the London paparazzi.
What'd you say?
You're like what, man?
What'd you say?
You're like what?
We're not in the Mickey Mouse Club anymore. Bob Thompson, what's going on with this arc? What's going on with child stars, teen stars? What's happened here?
Well, first of all, when I heard that sound clip of Annette singing, I burst out into weeping for my lost childhood. I grew up listening to that kind of stuff. Well, there's a whole lot of stuff going on. For one thing, who knows how many child stars back in the age of the Mouseketeers got into temper tantrums and used expletives. We didn't have people with cell phones recording it. A lot of this stuff simply didn't get exposed. I imagine there are a lot of really, really shocking things that child stars were doing back in the dawn of the movies and into the 50s.
Yeah.
We just didn't see it. So some of this arc we're talking about may just be something that we see more stuff now. The other thing is that, the arc of all of us, when we're kids, we're sweet little things and we pet puppies and all of this kind of stuff, and then we grow up and we start speaking in nastier ways and we start making bad choices. The difference is that nobody's paying attention to us going from sweet little cherub to, obnoxious adult. And in fact, we are now not only paying attention to these child stars, we're paying attention to them with a focus and a specificity in the last couple of decades that has never existed in human history.
A focus, a specificity, and media that is more intrusive than ever before.
Right.
This is a long story. Jane O'Connor, you tell it wonderfully well. You take us all the way back to the early cinema age. Oh, you're welcome. You quote President Roosevelt during the 1930s talking about Shirley Temple, sort of capturing some of this attitude, him saying, it is a splendid thing that for just 15 cents an American can go to a movie and look at the smiling face of a baby and forget his troubles. Take us back. Where does the whole idea of the child star really come from, Jane?
Well, it's really about our need to have, a group of people in our society that we imbue with all this idealistic ideas around innocence and goodness and purity. And in the modern age, this has become the child. I mean, in the medieval times, way back in the day, children were just part of adult society. There was no real difference between adulthood and childhood. Children worked. children were involved in sort of public life and the world. We've kind of separated out childhood and adulthood over the last 200, 300 years or so in the West, and particularly over the 20th century, which has been called the century of the child, where children are seen as, you know, childhood is seen as a very separate place from adulthood. Children should be educated, they should be playing, they should be in a domestic environment. The way that we construct childhood, children should not be having a public persona, having a professional identity, making money. So child stars fall outside that normative categorization of childhood in the Western world. And I think that because they're so anomalous, they attract a lot of attention and also a lot of stigma when they kind of upturn those expectations around ideal childhood, innocence, etc.
Well, and this tension, as you point out, that there's an ideology of childhood. It's not just a fixed experience over all time. We conceptualize it differently depending on the age we're in. And these
Absolutely.
Child stars, you say, who at once are supposed to kind of epitomize whatever our current ideology is, the iconographic symbol of it. At the same time, in a time when kids were supposed to be innocent and not working, that they're immediately in tension with it.
Absolutely. I mean, they're a living sort of paradox, really, and they don't kind of fit anymore in the way that we have such protectionist discourses around childhood, so many rules and regulations and legislation protecting children, and yet we allow, you know, this very, yes, a very small number, but still a very small number of children to kind of stand up there and take it like adults. And get sort of built up and knocked down in the sort of traditional media celebrity arc. These are actually children, and I think we have to remember that.
And boy, is it a whiplashing tension, and you can see that again and again. Here's sound of Lindsay Lohan. Before she became Lindsay the Bad, she was Lindsay the Adorable. Here she is at 12 years old, 1998, The Parent Trap plays two twin sisters, separated as babies, one raised in England, one in the U.S. They meet up at summer camp, plot to go home with the other's parents to pull it off. They've got to look like each other, including pierced ears.
Oh, my God. I have pierced ears.
No, 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 and no, not happening. Sorry, wrong number, I won't.
I refuse.
Then cutting your hair was a total waste, because, I mean, there's no way I can go to camp with pierced ears and come home without them. I mean, come on, get real.
All sweetness and light, but last month, March 18th, Lindsay Lohan struck a plea deal, just her latest, in Los Angeles Superior Court, will send her to locked rehab for 90 days. Judge James Dabney said, no more second chances, Lindsay.
This is it. You violate your probation, then we're not going to be having discussions about putting you back on probation on either of these cases. We're just going to impose sentence, and we're going to be done with it.
Bob, I mean, it's not everybody, but here we see this again and again, Bob Thompson, the sweetness, and then boom.
Well, we do. And once again, I just have to remind people that think of your own kids. You know, you think back of how sweet it was when they first asked you to get their ears pierced and then all the trouble they got into later. I mean, this arc happens all the time to regular people as they grow up. It's just that we pay attention to these. But there's a couple of other things going on here. I'm amazed that this doesn't happen even more extremely and more often. When you take a child at an era and an age when they're still kind of inventing themselves and coming of consciousness, and you surround them with the kind of slobbering attention and the power and the money and the yes men and all of this other kind of stuff, it's extraordinary that every single last one of them doesn't suffer some pretty serious consequences of that. We all know what spoiling a kid can do. A child celebrity is spoiled on a level that I think most of us can't even conceive. And then on top of that, when you grow up out of childhood, it used to be, Annette Funicello had the opportunity of roles just as pure and kind of sweet as she had when she was a child actor. Those beach movies were pretty G-rated. Now, when a child actor grows up, if they want to keep acting, especially female actors, there are very few roles left for them to play where they can maintain that kind of pure and innocent sort of persona.
And so they're right into Spring Breakers, or Britney Spears right into Hot Pants. Hollywood discovered early, though, Jane, that the society wanted this image of the child up in front of them on the big screen in the media.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it was gold dust when they discovered, you know, the power of Shirley Temple, Jackie Coogan. I mean, these children brought in so much money for the studios, they were like an escapism from everyday life and embodied this kind of angelic innocence and purity, especially in the Depression and the war years. You can see how they were a real kind of foil to that. It really was with the invention of cinema and then later on television that the child star really got into its stride. And has been carrying on ever since. But, you know, there is an argument that I make in my book as well that every society has always had myths and legends around wonder children, you know, the child archetype, as Jung called them. And that we look at stories and legends and religions in the world, almost all of them have this kind of the child archetype, the wonder child, the sun child.
Wonder children. Jane O'Connor, please stand by there in Birmingham. Bob Thompson in Syracuse. We're talking about the role of the child star, the teenage star. You can join us, 800-423-8255. All around the world here, Justin Bieber and Ludacris. You can join us, 800-423-TALK. What do you see happening? What hunger in society pushes these young stars up so prominently? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the role of the child star, the teenage star, from Annette Funicello to Justin Bieber, or behind us right here, Willow Smith with 21st Century Girl. Why we make them famous, how their role has changed. Jane O'Connor is with us, author of The Cultural Significance of the Child Star, and from Jackie Coogan to Michael Jackson, what child stars tell us about ideologies of childhood, also of the forthcoming children and media. Bob Thompson is with us from Syracuse, New York. He's author of Television's Second Golden Age and Primetime Prime Movers. He's at Syracuse University, director of the Center for TV and Pop Culture there. And it's changing. Here's Annette Funicello. She's 23 years old here, playing a clean-cut teenage girl, singing alongside Frankie Avalon in the 1965 movie Beach Blanket Bingo.
Take a blanket, made for two now. It's a game for me and you now. Yeah, let's give it a whirl. Beach blanket bingo. Beach blanket.
Giving it a whirl sweetly. Walt Disney advised her not even to show her belly button in that movie, and she didn't, even while there were plenty of other bikinis. Fast forward, Disney stars Selena Gomez and Vanessa Hudgens made a dramatic break from their good girl personas in the new film Spring Breakers. They play bored college girls determined to go to Florida for spring break, spend pretty much the whole movie in their bikinis as they rob a restaurant, spend time in jail, get into a whole lot of sex, drugs, hip-hop, gang warfare with drug dealer played by James Franco. Here's some sound from the trailer.
All I know is I'm not going to sit here another day.
Spring break. Your chance to see something different.
Spring break.
Just get that cash.
Pretend like it's a video game.
We can do this.
Spring break.
Selena Gomez and more in Spring Breakers. Liz is calling from North Andover, Massachusetts. Liz, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, my comment really is, you know, one of your guests mentioned that, you know, back in the days of Jackie Coogan and all those folks, you know, the child star was a big moneymaker for Hollywood. Yeah, they were a big moneymaker for Hollywood, but the audience they were making the money off of was still adults for the most part. And nowadays, Disney, I mean, I call them the evil empire. I have a daughter who's 11 years old, and I am constantly fighting the battle of the way Disney portrays these young girls in supposedly in 8th through maybe 12th grade. They're dressed up and they are tarted up like they are, you know, 25 or 30 years old with the amount of makeup and the clothing. And I have to deal with an 11-year-old who thinks that that's normal, that that is how maybe she should dress. And it's not, it's, yes, I can shut the TV off. I can tell her not to watch those things. But I go into the stores, and there I find the High School Musical t-shirt. You know, when she was 5 years old, they were selling High School Musical t-shirts in size 5. You know, for 5-year-old girls.
And there's no escaping it. There's just no escape, Liz, I'm sure.
There is no escape from it. And they're marketing this sort of sexuality that is way beyond the age of young girls. And, you know, Disney just drives me crazy for that. You know, maybe they had Annette Funicello, you know, cover her belly button. But, boy, they've lost touch with that.
That day is long gone. Liz, I appreciate your call. Jane, I'll bring this to you. But Bob Thompson, first to you, the tarted up. I mean, the Pretty Baby is back there in the past. I'm sure Jane will remind us of the sexuality, even in Shirley Temple's time. Yeah. But it's pedal to the metal on this front now, Bob.
Well, it is, and I go back and watch the old Mickey Mouse Club, and especially in the later years with Annette Funicello, she was wearing makeup, and she certainly had those sweaters on that emphasized...
Clingy used to be the word, clingy.
Right. But anyway, it is interesting, because High School Musical is a great example. I mean, in many ways, that was such an old-fashioned, retro kind of program. I don't think they kissed until, like, High School Musical 2. That high school was purer. It was free of drugs and tobacco and alcohol and sexuality and all the rest of it. But everybody on there was really sexed up. I mean, they really did look hot, I guess would be the word. It's interesting how, you know, for a long time, childhood only lasted for the brief time you were very young. When you got old enough to walk around, you had to go out and bring in the sheaves and milk the cows, and you were brought into adult society. Mm-hmm. We then, of course, decelerated the idea of growing up, and we let childhood go a lot longer. Now I think we've kind of shifted that with regards to one is starting to be sexualized and becomes aware of these kinds of things as a child at a much, much, much earlier age than they ever did before. And what's that? That's done has completely altered the way in which we look at childhood. Leave It to Beaver was still showing kids being funny because they were so cute and innocent. Now we've got a baby on Family Guy who says the kinds of things that could get you fired from your job or kicked out of your house.
Jane O'Connor, take us back to what's changed and what hasn't here. What about Shirley Temple? What about Jackie Coogan? You might even have to remind our listeners who Jackie Coogan was, but what about the roles they played in this regard?
So Jackie Coogan was discovered by Charlie Chaplin, and he was in The Kid in 1919. As the kind of little ragamuffin child, you know, who was kind of saved and was sort of hard done by the adults around him. And Shirley Temple also used to play a lot of those roles where she was the kind of the poor child, but she had the good heart, you know, and that would shine through in the end. But going back to Liz's point about the kind of the sexualization of young girls, especially on screen, I mean, Shirley Temple's very early appearances on screen were called the baby burlesques. And she was only 3, and often she was dressed in, you know, what we would consider very inappropriate clothing in a way that at the time was seen as amusing, but now we would see it as completely unacceptable. So I think that there's always been this danger of sexualizing children who are in the public eye and who are sort of seen as child stars. And I think that it really is, there's two things going on here, that on the one hand, childhood as Bob says, has been extended and extended. So, you know, we expect children to be children for longer and longer. You know, 18 is the kind of current rule of thumb about when childhood ends. Well, you know, how much are you actually a child at 16, 17, 18 is another debate. But on top of that, you know, children are becoming less and less under adult control. And I think social media and the internet and digital technologies has got a lot to play in there. That, you know, whereas before a lot of the main influences on children and young people would come from their family, their school, their church, their local community. Now, you know, they have influences from myriad sources all over the world, lots of different people, lots of different ideas, lots of different websites. I mean,
sure.
Got Twitter. And so they're less and less under adult control.
They're more like the Lost Boys and the Peter Pan crew just out there in the wild.
Yeah, it is. Like, I mean, it has been likened to the wilderness. You know, the internet is like a wilderness that we just let our children wander in.
And then we hold a few up and have a lot to say about them. Daniel in Lexington, Kentucky is calling. Hi, Daniel. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I've got a point kind of similar to that one. The story I know about Ron Howard is that when he was a young kid playing on Mayberry, his dad at one point took him aside because he was acting up and giving the crew grief, and he spanked him, told him that you're here to do a job. You need to be respectful to these adults and do that job. And my understanding is they didn't have another problem out of him since, and he's become a top producer and has not had this in and out of rehab trail behind him. And what I hear about a lot of the parents of the child stars now is that they're either deliberately or not deliberately, they're overwhelmed by all the stuff going on around their kids, and they don't just do that. They don't have that firm hand, and off they go.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not the Andy Griffith Show out there anymore. Daniel, I appreciate your call. Bob Thompson, I mean, a lot of parents these days are their child star's managers. They have a big financial. That's not new, but they're positioned sometimes more as kind of co-creators of careers than as parent figures in these lives.
Well, and not only co-creators of careers, but enablers of all kinds of bad behaviors. You can go down some of these child stars, and the parents are more in need of parenting than the kids are. Some of these families, the parents' behavior is just as outrageous. The Ron Howard case is what everybody brings up. Here's a child star, started early, was a big star on two different TV series, and turned out really, really well. I was a friend of one of the directors of the Andy Griffith Show, and they said ever since Ron Howard was a little kid, he was wanting to learn how to direct and do all of that kind of stuff. So clearly all child stars don't go bad. On the other hand, the roles, the one thing I think we have to keep pointing out is there just isn't roles for, you could be a Disney star, and if you want to keep being an actor, there aren't roles anymore for the kind of things that Annette Funicello could be on. Can you imagine if you made Beach Blanket Bingo today? They kind of tried with that from Justin to Kelly, the two people who won the first American Idol.
Yeah.
And it didn't do any business at all. Marie Osmond, I suppose she managed this, but that was a generation and a half ago.
You know, Jane O'Connor, in England, people go after Lindsay Lohan's parents, but you remind us all the way back to Jackie Coogan. Again, this is the very young boy that Charlie Chaplin brought to the screen.
Mm.
Of course, his family circumstances became very famous, changed the law in this country.
Yeah, they did.
Remind us of that story. What happened there with Jackie and his parents and his money?
Jackie was earning a lot of money through his films in the 1920s, and his mother and his mother's new husband were managing him, and he assumed as he was growing up that money would be, at least a large chunk of it would be available to him when he reached adulthood.
Millions.
But actually, when he reached the age of 21, there was only $1,000 for him, and they'd spent all the rest, and led to bringing in of what's called Coogan's Law, which protects children's earnings from parents, managers, etc., so that at least they have something in adulthood, and they're not totally exploited and taken advantage of, which, you know, as Bob said, is unfortunately seems to be quite a common story.
Let's hear the change in voices from then to now, at least from the 50s to now. Here again, Annette Funicello, this is Mouseketeer, along with her host, Jimmy Dodd. Here they are in the 50s, giving some advice to young viewers.
Today we have some words to grow by, and I'm going to call on Annette to give them to you. Annette? Hi, Annie.
Hi, Jimmy.
All ready?
Ready.
Okay.
Beauty is a beauty.
It does. That's what wise men say. Now, if you would be beautiful, do this every day.
Beauty is as beauty does. Another era. 1993, talking with NPR, Annette Funicello reflected on that time when she teamed up with, a little later in the 60s, with Frankie Avalon for that series of Bikini Party movies. And she said, Walt Disney, who always wanted her to call him Uncle Walt, one of her biggest role models, tried hard to keep her image wholesome.
He said, would you mind not exposing your navel? He said, I know all the girls will be bikini clad. And I would like you to look different. Is that okay with you? And I said, of course it's okay.
The difference today? Here's Selena Gomez in a January interview with MTV explaining her path from starring in the Disney Channel's Wizards of Waverly Place to her role in the R-rated new movie Spring Breakers, plenty of sex and violence, directed by Harmony Korine.
Disney was my life, and
That's all, in a way, that's all I knew. So once that ended, I definitely think it was good for me to go to an extreme like this. That's what was so liberating about it, was I felt so safe with Harmony, and I felt so safe with the girls, and I was really able to push myself to places I didn't even know I could go.
Oh, the places you'll go. Dr. Seuss would, the hair would be blown back. Jane, you write that we as a society, you know, we kind of push them out there to personify all kinds of things we want to see. Then we also punish them because their lives are by definition not within the normative bounds of what we like to see as childhood, Jane.
Yeah, that's right. So coming from a sociological perspective, if we see childhood as, you know, not a universal category that's the same for everybody, but that's constructed in different ways, in different cultures, in at different times, the way that childhood is constructed in Western culture is, you know, that we expect them to be innocent, etc., separate from adulthood. And it does seem that the media kind of are very keen to have a child star gone bad story, because it kind of justifies us saying, yes, you see what happens when children go outside the normative boundaries, the cage that we've created for them. They get damaged, you know, they destroy themselves. I mean, but actually, not all child stars do go bad. In fact, the majority of them, from the limited research that's been done, have what they would class as themselves as quite average kind of lives. But it seems to be like a myth that there's a curse on the child star, and it's a myth that's perpetrated particularly, you know, by mainstream media. And it kind of fits our trajectory of what we want to see. We seem to want to see these stories of children. You know, it's kind of early to kind of success, then too much too soon. You know, early to rise, early to rot. And it kind of fits with our trajectory, our expectations.
Justin Bieber has his worst birthday ever, and the media go wild about it. Patrick in Fort Benning, Georgia. Patrick, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Sure. What do you see?
I'm sorry to throw you off track a little bit, but I wanted to bring up the show Toddlers and Tiaras.
I don't know it. What is it, Patrick?
It's a beauty pageant show where mothers and fathers have their children of as young as, you know, 4 and 5 years old, dolled up in basically prom dresses, and they have swimsuit editions. And
oh, yeah, I've seen it. Yes, I have seen something from that. What do you think is going on there, Patrick?
I couldn't begin to tell you, but, you know, honestly, I think, you know, back in the day, people looked at these child stars, and it was kind of, it was nice to look at, but then they went back to their lives. Now, with, you know, social media and everything, everyone's so immersed in everything, and, you know, they actually think that they could have a chance of being that person someday, whereas it's not this fantasy. So you got all these mothers, you know, raising their kids, and even Justin Bieber is a product of one of those types of mothers who, you know, raised their child for the sole purpose of being famous someday. And I think it kind of points to the reference, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side, or keeping up with the Joneses. Those are negative references that our society has turned into, you know, keeping up with the Kardashians as like a positive thing. You should want to try to be and emulate these famous people. And I just think it reflects overall on the poor direction our society has turned towards.
We're putting up icons of childhood, even at that incredibly young age, in prom dresses and, I don't know, swimsuits, Toddlers and Tiaras. Oh, boy. Patrick, thank you for reminding us of that one, I guess. We've got more to look at here. Jane O'Connor is with us, author of From Jackie Coogan to Michael Jackson, What Child Stars Can Tell Us About Ideologies of Childhood. Bob Thompson is with us, author of Prime Time, Prime Movers from Syracuse University. Listeners, you can join us. Do we set them up to flame out? Do we somehow devour them? 800-423-8255. Here's Hit the Lights. Selena Gomez, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. One Direction there. Live while we're young. Yes, they're young. We're talking about the role of the child star, the teenage star, from Annette Funicello to Justin Bieber to One Direction. Why we make them famous, how their role has changed over time. 800-423-8255 is our number, and you can join us. What are young stars acting out for us? Does innocence have anything to do with it anymore? Do we set them up to flame out? Is there a healthy way to go from teen idol to centered adult? And why are we so quick to judge them? 800-423-TALK is our number. Jane O'Connor is with us from Birmingham in England, University of Wolverhampton there. Bob Thompson's with us from Syracuse University. You can join us as well. We've got lots of comments here, Jane. Bob here. A listener says, look, I'm 70 years old, African-American woman, not attracted to all the musketeers. I was not of their color or caste, she says. Not a program for her. Most of the black stars, she says, I've seen were used, black stars were used as dupes for racist humor, such as in Rascals, other movies. The Beach movies didn't change my evaluation. She says the child stars I remember were Jackie Lyman, Stevie Wonder, other young black singers. Do you see a difference in the way, young black stars today? I guess she's got a point before the civil rights movement and greater awareness about that, Bob. What about a color line through this population?
Well, certainly in the early days, if you were going to see young black stars, they were generally singers or dancers. Television in the very early days in this country, what few shows that it had that starred African-Americans were shows like Beulah and Amos and Andy. Nat King Cole was an exception to that, but it didn't last very long. I think that has changed considerably. Obviously, one could argue that the story, the biggest platonic ideal of a story of a child star, actually is the story of Michael Jackson, which is so complex and goes for so long. And he, of course, becomes a child star at a very early age and seems to experience all the tribulations of that in some of the most extreme ways.
Jane, turn your sociologist's eye on that incredible Michael Jackson story. How does that fit into your framework here?
Well, it is fascinating. I mean, obviously, it's a personal tragedy for him and his family. But from a sociological perspective, he really epitomizes the person who hasn't had a childhood or sees himself as saw himself and described himself as never having had a childhood, and having that haunt him for the rest of his life, where he's created the place he lives called Neverland. He calls himself the Peter Pan of pop. You know, the consequences of for individuals who don't feel that they've had a normal childhood, however that's constructed in their society, and how confusing and devastating that can be to the adult identity, especially if you feel that you were valued for those traits when you were very young. I mean, Michael Jackson went on to obviously be incredibly successful and talented as an adult as well, but it still didn't seem to manage bring him happiness in that way and personal fulfillment, because childhood is a very strong concept in our society, and if we feel we don't have one, it can really set us outside normal society and make us feel stigmatized. There are lots of reasons why people feel they've missed out on a childhood. But for child stars, it's a particular way.
You remind us of Drew Barrymore, of course, way back in Steven Spielberg's E.T. 1981, she was 6 years old, suddenly a star. And then later she said, maybe that was the best time of her life, but by the time she was 13, alcohol and drugs, rehab center. She wrote an autobiography, Drew Barrymore, saying, I've always grappled with the clash of image versus reality. The public saw me as Drew Barrymore, a movie star, while I viewed myself quite differently as a sad, lonely, unattractive girl with not much to her advantage. I wanted to shout, hey, I didn't want to be famous. I just wanted to be loved. Took her a while to find her way back onto that track. And by the time she got there, it was a different track. Not 1965 anymore, but here's Annette Funicello with the Beach Boys. Title track, last movie she made with Disney, The Monkey's Uncle, Innocence.
Well, I don't care what the whole world thinks.
She loves The Monkey's Uncle.
Call us a couple of missing links.
She loves The Monkey's Uncle.
Love all his monkey shines. Every day is Valentine's. I love The Monkey's Uncle, and The Monkey's Uncle's 8 for me.
8 for me.
whatever, Monkey's Uncle, mid-60s Gidget, title character played by Sally Field. And listen to the tone of this. She tells her father he has nothing to worry about, or she has nothing to worry about from other boys while her steady boyfriend is off at college.
All I do is talk about Jeff and how much implicit faith and trust we have in each other. I let the fellows know right off that I could never be interested in them, so they don't have to waste any time being interested in me. What?
You and I had better have a talk.
Of course, by the mid-60s, the laugh track is plenty skeptical right there. Joyce in Harwinton, Connecticut. Joyce, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to ask, the consumer group is the largest consumer group in the country is teenagers,
yeah.
And they have a lot more disposable income than ever. I was born in 57, and we had to share our home phone with a neighbor to save money, and now kids go out and buy iPhones. And so there's also, something I wanted to ask is how has that changed over the years as far as marketers are obviously marketing to teenagers who have disposable income and who aren't going to spend it in a logical way.
Well, it may be logical for them, but Bob, how about just sheer market power here? I mean, that's not a news story, but maybe it just grows, put it together with sort of independent media lives of teens today as they are a target market.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinarily important market. They do. Many teenagers, of course, do have jobs, but they don't yet have mortgages. You're also training the consumers for the rest of their lives. Very, very important to marketers. And part of it, I think before we leave, we've got to say a little, we kind of look at Annette Funicello like it's sort of an Eden Lost. Those two clips you just played, and not to say anything bad about
Annette, yeah.
Sally Field or Annette Funicello, but I got to say, during the 1960s, if you were a teenager, you had to start thinking that stuff was pretty stupid. I mean, look at what was going on during the 1960s, this pure attempt to retain this kind of silly sort of utopia. I have to say, Miley Cyrus and Selena Gomez and Vanessa Hutchins, I understand why they would want to escape the utopian childhood dream of the Disney world and want to do something that seems a little more relevant to how people, including teenagers, live their life and what they're interested in. The subject matter is more disturbing, it's more adult, there's more drug use, there's more bad language and all the rest of it in it. But I don't think we should kind of expect that these poor young women should have to remain in that kind of Disney utopian haze when they're no longer children. These women are now in their 20s. I can understand why they want to have more adult roles.
Jane, is this, you know, just moving away from a kind of misty Disney fiction to something more like Keeping It Real?
I think so. I agree with Bob. What other choice do they have, really? I mean, you can't stay a child forever, and we've had cases of child stars who've tried to stay children forever and suffered from eating disorders and body dysmorphia. And, you know, you have to grow up. We all grow up. So why? I think the question is why we feel so threatened when child stars grow up.
Exactly.
And I go back to saying that I think it's because we imbue them with all of these kind of, ideal traits of freshness and purity and happiness and all the things that we nostalgize about our own childhood. And when we see, you know, our child stars grow up, it makes us remember that we're all growing up, we're all growing away from that, that nobody can embody that. You know, we have unrealistic expectations around child stars, I think.
So we're kind of sadists, Bob, with these stars. I mean, we make them, but then insist they stay little Cupid dolls and punish Justin Bieber when he's a teenager.
I think Jane is absolutely right that at the bottom of all this is, of course, this great human tragedy, which is that kids grow up, and especially the way our society is developed. We love our kids. We love them being cute. We love all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, inevitably they have to leave us. Our children have to divorce us if they're going to be healthy individuals. And I think all of that process, we kind of are using child stars as metaphors. When we get all bent out of shape that Justin Bieber is misbehaving and being sassy, in so many ways, I think we're just playing out what we may very well be feeling about our own children growing up who are misbehaving and being sassy, or our own removal from childhood, which brings us back to Michael Jackson. As Jane pointed out, you got to grow up, and he was somebody who thought he was powerful enough and rich enough to make that not happen. and that was a disaster. In an odd sort of way, this ugly trajectory we see with most child stars might just be what it's like to grow up in this modern 21st century world.
Maybe better to accept that and roll with it than to try to go to Never Never Land. Allison in New Orleans. Thanks for calling, Allison. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to point out, I mean, you guys were kind of broached a little bit, too, that there's instances where we go in the exact opposite direction that modern American culture is going with the society and their children. Is in Japan, for instance, they over-virginize their pop singers, and if they do something, like even if they're 20 years old and they find somebody snaps a photo of them leaving their boyfriend's apartment early in the morning, this poor girl shaved her head in shame and went on TV and apologized to all of her fans, and they dropped her down in ranking in her singing group. And I think that it's really just the pressure that they have to deal with. And then growing up, and they either have to conform to this over-virginized ideal, or they have to completely break away and go to that really dark place. But I think that even that dark place is a pressure point, because it's like, I can't stay here in our culture. I can't stay perfect and innocent forever. I have to go on and move on and do something completely crazy and out there just to stay relevant.
And do it completely in the public eye. I mean, Jane, Allison reminds us out of New Orleans of your point that we have frameworks that we want to see, ideologies, conceptualizations of childhood, and they're different between cultures. Maybe this hyper-virginal Japanese model is clearly not the one that we're pushing for with toddlers and tiaras.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it does vary culturally. And as the lady said, you know, Japan's an extreme example of that. You know, they really do virginalize their teen stars. And we seem to, Western culture seems to be caught somewhere in between, you know, somewhere in the middle of wanting teen stars to be, you know, virginal and not drink and not do anything wrong, but also kind of wanting, really being quite salacious about wanting the gossip when they do.
Of course, lift the covers on that in Japan, it can go the other way in a hurry. Once you're out of that narrow celebrity stripe, you've cut many strands in everybody's culture. Judy in Nashville. Judy, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi. I am a vocal coach, and I deal with a lot of these child stars, children that want to be child stars and families want to be. I'd like to share a couple of observations.
Yes.
First of all, those of us that mentor people like kids like this need to realize that we do not need to raise them as narcissists. That's the problem. And the other thing is, human beings in developing into human beings need to find the edge to live on and need to find something important to do. But the problem with the children raised in this society to be stars is their importance is like to bring in all this money and this fame for their families, and they're confused. We need to raise them to realize that voices exist to deliver messages that change the world and make the world a better place. And I think that some of them have, like Taylor. I would say Taylor Swift is hopefully, you know, she'll continue, but she was mentored by her family and use her fame to make a difference.
Judy, you're breaking up on us a little bit, but there's a vocal coach out of Nashville, Jane, saying, you know, watch out for all the money and fame and narcissism. There's a sort of idealistic vocal coach, I would say. Raise your voice, you know, to speak up for things that are good and important.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful notion, but hard to sustain in the face of all the money that rolls around in this realm.
Well, absolutely. And I think we, you know, today there's so many ways for young people and children to become famous. I mean, TV talent shows are a massive thing here in the UK. I mean, that's where One Direction came through, from X Factor here. And social media, there's ever more opportunities for children to become famous, you know, to launch themselves, to have this kind of stardom, or at least sort of some limited notion of fame at an early age. And it's just going to become an ongoing issue. And it's empowering. I mean, I think the 21st century is really seeing children become much more empowered. They're much more know about their rights, and that, you know, they have all these connections through the internet and social media. You know, and as your last caller said, they want to find something important to do. They want to make it in the world. That's a natural feeling.
But I just think we have to look at the artifice around it and where that's going to lead a lot of these kids.
I mean, you look at this arc, you write, Jane, the 20th century, seeing this shift in the child performer from screen angel, that kind of Judy Garland or Shirley Temple role, to cool kid. You say it's reflecting a shift in wider ideologies of childhood and the way in which childhood has become more adultified.
Yeah, I mean, I think as one of your callers mentioned earlier, it used to be, child stars used to be for adults. They used to be entertainment for adults. You know, oh, aren't they cute, blah, blah, blah. Now, it's usually for their peers that they're entertaining. You know, so they need to kind of be cool. They need to connect. They're not just trying to be cute anymore, because there's a whole new market of children and teens who are, you know, consumers, who choose the media that they watch, who can make or break a career, who can, you know, like and follow the stars that they like. So they have to be connected with. So that has changed the kind of flavor of the child star. I mean, basically, child stars play out what we want to see. You know, they're very flexible, it seems to me. Whatever the audience demands, that's what they become. And that's what we seem to be demanding.
The wonder child will always be there, Bob Thompson, but we need to look at ourselves a little bit about what we're asking for, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, these. Let's face it, we used to have symbols, Apollo and Aphrodite and Bacchus. Now we have symbols of our psyche as well, but they're actual human beings, and many of them are very young human beings. And the job of being a symbol for the world is a tough job and often dangerous.
Well, and off we go. Spring Breakers to back the Wayback Machine to the Mickey Mouse Club. Bob Thompson, Syracuse University. Jane O'Connor at Birmingham at the University of Wolverhampton. Big thanks to both of you for being with us this hour. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Go out. Just a little more Mickey. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
See you real soon.
K-E-Y.
Why? Because we like you.